To order, thank you all for being here. Today is Thursday, April 4th, 2019. The time is 9:02 a.m. In attendance are Senator Birch, Senator Hughes, Senator Costello, Senator Begich, and myself, Stevens. We have a quorum to conduct business. Today we're going to continue our confirmation hearings for appointees to the Alaska State Board of Education Early Development and also for the University of Alaska Board of Regents. And then we're going to take up Senate Bill 79, sponsored by Senator Hughes, also referred to as the Education Transformation Act. Any questions or comments before we start? So we should have University of Alaska Board of Regents appointee online, Mr. Darrell Hargraves. Apologize, Ms. Hargraves, for not being able to hear you very well yesterday, so let's see if we have a better connection today. Are you with us, Mr. Hargraves?
Yes, I'm here. It is nice to have a quiet phone line.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Darrell. And hesitate to ask you to do this again, but would you go through your personal background, what you bring to the board, why you're interested in serving, and any goals you may have to improve our university system? So please go ahead, Mr. Hargraves.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Darrell Hargraves. On February 25th, 1969, I found myself with my wife and two small babies arriving in Fairbanks on our way to Barrow, where we were to teach school. We had a pleasant experience in Barrow, subsequently went to Kivalina, and then to Gamble. I was recruited by the University of Alaska to do an internship at the University of Alaska, and subsequently there became the director of the Division of Statewide Services, where I worked for a few years. 1974, I went to Nome as superintendent for 7 years. That I went to Ketchikan and was superintendent for 7 years. And then when I left Ketchikan, retired, I served 5 school districts as a consulting superintendent. And that took me to 5 different locations: Fort Yukon, Dillingham, Tolk, Delta Junction, and Cake. Also, I think it was 16 years I was on the local boundary commission, served most of that time as chair, and that took us to all over the state, so I pretty much got to know all of the state except out the Aleutian chain past Kodiak. Someday I want to make a visit to Dutch Harbor so I can claim that area. I'm pleased to be able to be on the Board of Regents. It seems like I came in at a time when the university has some serious problems. I had no idea when I accepted the appointment that they would have as huge a problems as they suddenly begin to have just after I came onto the board. I hope we can see these problems worked out for the university. I hope that we can get on with some other issues that need to be taken care of at the university. The teacher preparation program lost at Anchorage is a terrible thing in my estimation. And of course, university administration is still working on the budget, waiting to see what's going to come from that. In the meantime, I'd like to see the university get into some other issues. For example, I'd like to see the land grant completed. That process has been ongoing since 1915, and the university was originally appropriated about 360 acres. To date, after legislation repealing things and a long history, the university has about 145,000 acres. I think that there secured by the state and the university to get that land grant completed. I think the university can do a lot to streamline things between campuses if we're going to be a statewide system. I think that there needs to be more cooperation. And when you take a credit hour on one campus, that needs to count as the same credit hour on the other campuses. So I think that those show promises for the future, and I look forward to working with them. I can take any questions you'd like, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hargraves. Of course, many of us around this table have known you for years. I first met you at the local Boundary Commission, and appreciate all of your years of service to the state. Could you reflect a little more on the teacher preparation program? As you said, we've lost accreditation for some teacher programs in at University of Alaska Anchorage. The latest thing I've heard, university president has going to recommend to the board that they consider closing the School of Education. I'm not sure, maybe part of it, and I'm just concerned about that because that's the lion's share of our teacher program, teacher education program. So, any thoughts you may have? You think that's the right approach? Should we apply for accreditation again? Can we handle it through assistance from Fairbanks and Anchorage and Juneau when it comes to teacher education? Any thoughts you have on that? I'd appreciate it, Darrell.
To estimation, that happened to the Department of Education, which has one of the most direct influences across the whole state. If I understand it correctly, after the spring and summer, we can expect there's still up to 350 students who are planning to get their teaching degrees from that campus. And that would have gone a long ways toward helping the teacher shortage across the state. I've seen those young people that are in that program, and they're exactly what the state needs. It's just unfortunate in so many ways that they can't get certified now from that program. It's hard for me to know what happened with that program. And let me say, I don't speak for the Board of Regents or administration. This is strictly me. But it's just unthinkable to me that a department like that can lose its accreditation so easily. I have extensive experience with Northwest Accrediting Association, which that campus is also part of Northwest, with secondary schools. And you don't just up and lose accreditation overnight. They usually have some time for people to take care of problems. They maybe put a unit on probation or something. And I still, after a couple of months working with the university here, I still can't figure out why they lost their accreditation. I've seen the list, and I've heard people say that it was because they didn't have the data that would support their accreditation, but somehow there's just something I can't figure out exactly the or how it happened that they lost that accreditation. I have said this, and I guess it's kind of hard, but administration that was in charge of that program and that department, I hope they're all gone. The people who would let this happen just have to be fired. That's all I know. And it's my understanding that none of those people are there in charge of that program anymore. The state needs those teachers, and I'm just real sorry that it now. I think that Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Southeast could put extensions in Anchorage and could continue to train teachers with their accreditation. And that might be a good good thing. I think that 30 years from now, we may not have too many brick-and-mortar classrooms. Delivery of programs, classes, with our use of technology, I think is a coming thing anyway. But, so I'm just very sorry. I try to put myself in the place of those parents and students. And can you imagine the effect that this has had on a parent who's been striving to pay the tuition, the books? They've got their student up through the second or third year of the program, and now this happens. I consider it to be just a terrible situation.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hargraves, and with your knowledge and experience, you're certainly, I think, the right person to be there at this tough time for the university. So I appreciate your comments. We also have some questions from Senator Costello, then Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do have, I think, three questions, so I appreciate that. Mr. Hargraves, I appreciate your willingness to serve in this important capacity. I think education is the most important issue that we have in the state, you know, training future, young people for jobs. With your experience in, as superintendent and all of your experience that you bring, can you tell us, tell the committee what you see as the number one challenge facing Alaska based on your experience?
Number one challenge outside of education or?
Mr. Hargraves, related to your position as a regent, a potential regent, and your, with education.
Well, as far as the Board of Regents is concerned, I think the biggest issue we'll be dealing with, of course, the Board of Regents as a board of control has some. Doesn't have that many different responsibilities. First off, it hires and fires the president. It approves the budget, and then it establishes other policies that the university is to deal with. And, of course, right now the budget and the accreditation for that Department of Education are the two biggest problems that I know of that the Board of Regents is dealing with at this time. And education in general, it's going through a restructuring process of necessity because of a shortage of revenue for the budget. It doesn't make any difference what happens this year. The future years indicates to me that they're still going to have to be restructuring and rethinking about education in general. I believe that distance delivery at all levels of education is a coming thing, and I thought that 30 years from now, we may not be using the classrooms like we do today and have in the past. So, making changes with the use of modern-day technology is a big problem. Let me say, I have found universities back in the Midwest, lower 48, that are being very successful with distance delivery. I have found campuses that run full programs 200 miles from their campus and totally by technology, distance delivery. And being very successful, the University of Arizona is an example of a school that has just put in extensive distance delivery and having lots of success.
Thank you, Mr. Hargraves. Senator Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Hargraves. One of the things that I think is of a real concern in the state of Alaska is the teacher turnover and the timing of the budget, which requires districts to write several budgets, lay teachers off. We know that having consistent adults in a young person's life helps with adverse childhood experiences. And I see this situation as almost untenable, that we put districts across the state through this churning when in fact we really don't ever do anything different with the budget. So we hold off on passing an education budget to the very end. Talented teachers leave the state, and I feel that that's a part of, you know, the issue. This is a chronic problem that the state has, and at the same time, we have a huge blow to the university system with the loss of accreditation, which I chalk up to almost a lack of communication because it was not appealed. And so I think that at this point in our state's history, we're still shining a light on this, on the problems that we have in education. And it's my hope that there can be some leadership. I've introduced legislation to address this problem. It actually saves about $20 million to fund it, you know, to do it earlier. And I'm not interested in your opinion on my bill, because I think your position on this, you know, board should be absent of your position on any, you know, specific bill. But I just wanted to hear your thoughts on, you know, in your experience, have you seen teacher turnover as a problem related to the pink slip issue and the timing of the legislature passing our budget?
Yes. When I went to Dome as superintendent, that school district for years had 45 to 50% teacher turnover every year. Now, this was a huge problem. And back in those days, every one of those positions got filled by telephone. I heard people all over the United States, if a local certified teacher existed, it was just automatic that they got jobs. But I hired teachers from all over the United States. Teacher turnover has always been a huge problem. That's not something that has just happened. In the early 70s, we had a Ford Foundation grant funding some efforts to try to train teachers and keep them in the state. And it wasn't particularly successful. It was good for the teachers who did come. But this has been a problem forever. And I'm afraid with the loss of the teacher training in Anchorage that this problem is just simply going to get worse. I know for a fact that teachers, that superintendents and school districts all over the state are even traveling outside and contacting teacher placement things outside trying to locate applicants. They just don't have enough applicants within the state. Now, the funding of public schools is of interest. The state has had on the books some of the prize education funding formulas in the nation. We've been very fortunate. One of the biggest problems with our system is that we do have that big delay in getting an approved budget. I think some of the school districts are successful working with that, but it would be fantastic if you could fund education a year in advance so that people could prepare their budget and know how many teaching slots they could keep in place. Of course, there could be some disadvantages to that also, but I think overall, if school districts could know what revenue to actually depend on, that it would be a better process.
Thank you, Mr. Hargreaves. Senator Garcil.
Thank you. Just a comment, Mr. Chair. You know, I know the legislature and has done a lot of things to help grow our own engineers. We see the value of young people who know Alaska, who've grown up here, become educated here, and then work here and live the rest of our lives here. I would hope that the effort would turn towards growing our own teachers, perhaps from the rural communities themselves. And it is again, very unfortunate that the accreditation issue has sprung up. But it's my hope that we can find a way to identify people from rural communities who want to end up teaching in those areas. And I know that's a longer conversation, but I just wanted to put that out there. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Costello. And I think you could look to the nursing program for successes, too. I mean, that really has made a difference in Alaska to have that nursing program in the university that's worked so well. So we have comments from Senator Begich and Senator Birch, and then we'll go on. Thank you. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent Hargraves, I have a couple of questions for you. One is back on the issue of the accreditation, and I think I'm in agreement with you that at the very least the current accreditation should be extended to those students that are in Anchorage now, so that they can be sure that they're going to have a meaningful certificate. And I should put on the record that I run a scholarship fund that funds kids that go to University of Alaska Anchorage for school to become educators. But my bigger concern is the president's comments that he isn't intending to pursue accreditation, and I didn't hear you directly address that. Would it be your hope as a regent to continue to support the movement back to accreditation for the Anchorage campus, or are you satisfied with the president's suggestion that we let that accreditation go and simply just move teachers, instructors from Southeast and Fairbanks periodically to Anchorage in some kind of a itinerant program?
Well, I did say, and I do believe that this is a terrible problem. It's just, from my perspective, a terrible thing to lose that accreditation. Let me say that as a board of regent, I haven't been fully informed on too much about this, of whatever President Johnson plans to recommend. I haven't seen, or we haven't had him to present to us just yet what he plans to recommend. I will be personally looking for every way possible to keep that program in place. The problem that you have is that there's going to be a 2 or 3 year minimum period of time when there is no accreditation. So if we reapply and go through the process, there's that problem of not having accreditation. So I'm almost to the point of asking whether that particular accreditation is even necessary. Now, with the Department of Education's rules, it is necessary. But I know for a fact that some states have not bought into that particular accreditation. But the Alaska did, and each campus sold their program based on the fact that it had that accreditation. And people enrolled and paid the tuition with the understanding that that's what they would get. So I think that for a 2 or 3 year period, you're not going to graduate accredited students from that campus with the best alternatives. So I don't know what the president will recommend. I do think that some kind of an extension program could keep education students in place on that campus. But other than that, I don't think we have enough information as regents yet to know how to respond.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
I know because he announced it to the press, and so I read the articles about it, and they concern me because it seems that the intent is to recommend to you as a regent that they will eliminate or they won't pursue the accreditation program any longer. And I recognize the 2 to 3 year transition, which is why your suggestion of some kind of extension of the accreditation makes sense to me. But what I'm looking for is something a little more concrete than that, Mr. Hargraves. I want to know that my community, which is the largest community in the state that has 40% of the population plus of the state, is not going to have an unaccredited school. I mean, I guess that's one way to keep teachers locally, is to not have an accreditation process so that they have to stay in Alaska. That's one way to do it. That's not my ideal way, and I'm looking for something I think a little stronger than that, and I recognize you need to listen to what the president is offering. But the issue of accrediting teachers, given the turnover you've described, I think is a serious enough issue that I hope that you will I hope that you will be a bit more aggressive in trying to support what is essentially Anchorage and effectively Matt Sue's, you know, accredited, hopefully at some point accredited School of Education. I did want to say, though, earlier you mentioned that after you got on the board, everything appeared to go down the hill, and I want you to know that's correlation, I'm certain, and I hope it's not causation. You're too new to the process, but I'm looking forward to your service on the Board of Regents, and I just please take seriously the accreditation issue and the need for our community, our Anchorage community, to have an accredited School of Education that serves our South Central students. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Senator Branch. And so, as I understand it, the board is meeting this month and deal with that issue. The governor or the president of the university's recommendation, and I know the board will delve into that thoroughly. And just keep in mind, this is not the entire School of Education in Anchorage. It's just part of the program. So other programs, I assume, would continue. So we have some other questions here. Unless you had a comment, Mr. Hargraves.
Well, just let me assure you that when I first heard this, I thought it was, number one, a terrible problem, and I felt like personally that the administration on that campus should get with it and get the problems out and keep that accreditation. Now, I've heard the news reports like you have, and we've received notice that the president will be making some recommendations at this next board meeting. But be assured that I see this as a critical problem, and my first impulse is to try to work out a way to get that accreditation back in place.
Thank you, Mr. Hargraves. I appreciate your comments. And so let's move on. We have some comments or questions from Senator Birch and Senator Hughes. Senator
Birch. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Hargraves, for your willingness and interest and commitment to the University of Alaska. I guess one of the questions I had, and I very much appreciate your advocacy for the land grant program. I think the university was actually founded in 1917 as a School of Agriculture and College of Mines, and there is several hundred thousand acres committed at that time by the federal government. And then I believe in 1959, one of the first acts of the first legislature was to grant a million acres of land to the university. And so I think your aspirations there are much appreciated. One thing I've known, I attended the university in Fairbanks in the late 60s and 70s, and there's one university. My diploma says U of A on it. I think now we have 13 campuses and three major campuses, and I guess I'm kind of curious as to, you know, kind of your view on where, and I appreciate your comments on the distance learning. I think that's kind of an outlier out, you know, there for sure. But what do you think about the ability of the university to kind of be everywhere, at so many locations, if you will? And I remember I struggled with that in Fairbanks when they opened up a second College of Engineering, and just wondering how they're going to keep that working. And that was many years ago. But I know the community college in Anchorage merged, actually, I think it was 87 that the Anchorage Community College merged with the University of Alaska. But are we trying to do too much in too many locations? And I guess I'm just interested in more or less your thoughts on that through the chair.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it turns out that I have a little history in that area. One of the assignments I had the last year I was there at the university was to set up an organization and bring into existence the Tenenhall Valley Community College, the Tenenhall Community College there. One of the things that I advocated, that I wrote three reports to the provost there, which they subsequently used to get the legislature to fund it, but one of the things I pointed out was that there was no need for new buildings. They subsequently built an administrative building for that college, but the idea was that the Hutchison Career Center and the school district facilities would meet all of the facility needs. That has been true in this state since the Community College Act of 1962, I believe, but that university would utilize by memorandum of agreement the local school buildings. We had a president come into the state, and I remember his statement. He said if we had somebody from out in the solar system come here and look at this, what would they think would make sense? And his conclusion was that the thing that made sense was to do away with all those memorandums of agreement and the university start trying to do its own thing. Well, that meant building buildings. And quite frankly, the legislature at that time saw fit to support that kind of thing. The proliferation of physical assets for the university in some of these sites has never made any sense to me, and it doesn't today as hard as I try to look at it, because I've been in those communities. I've looked at those facilities. They sit dark all day, and the thing of it is, once you get a facility, you have to have a director, even if you don't have staff. There's not a thing that they do in those university facilities out there that they couldn't do with school district facilities. So I would activate that community college concept, the memorandum of agreement, and start using school facilities. As the director of the Division of Statewide Services, I put classes in schools all over the state, from Juneau to Kodiak to Barrow to Nome, Dillingham, Bethel, and it worked beautifully back in those days. So I have a hard time with the number of physical facilities. I know that people like them. Some people see them as the center of community activities, which I haven't seen it that much. But we've got some locations where that site is big enough, there are enough students to justify a campus. But for most of those campuses that you look at today, there's nothing done in those facilities that couldn't be done in the local school buildings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Hargraves and Senator. And Senator Hughes.
Yes, I know we're tight on time, Mr. Chair, so I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Hargraves, for stepping up. Senator Birch talked about all the various locations, and I have a question because I understand there's over 400 university degree programs, and I'm wondering, you mentioned in addition to looking at the land grant aspect, also some streamlining, and I'm just wondering if one of the things you will be interested in at the board level is looking at those programs and really using, I would think, maybe three criteria. Number one being the student interest and need and the demand, the programs that students are signing up. Number two being the workforce needs in our state, what the jobs that we need training, the industry business needs. And then number three, those programs that really make sense because of our uniqueness, our position on the globe, being the Arctic state, those kind of things. Because it makes me wonder, I keep thinking that when we have challenges, I don't always, I'm an optimist, Mr. Chair. As we look at restructuring, consolidating, streamlining, I see it, let's make lemonade, but let's not just make ordinary lemonade. Let's make great lemonade. Let's make the kind that students in our state will want to stay here and that will draw other students from out of state, because I think if we do try to spread ourselves too thin, do too many programs, we probably won't have as great of programs if we really trim down and focus on the ones that are based on student need, based on workforce needs, based on our unique position on the globe. And I would bet that if we kind of hone down and maybe trim some of these other programs away and really put our energy and focus on the ones based on those criteria, we could increase our ranking. So in U.S. News and World Report, when students around the nation or around the world are looking at what are the top-ranked schools for this program, that we will actually draw kids from other places, and our own kids will say, hey, I want to go to the top school for this, and I'm going to stay right here. So that's my vision, as to make really great lemonade out of the situation. So I've just wanted your thoughts, knowing that there are over 400 programs, and if in your position on Board of Regents, you would be brave enough to begin to look at what really makes sense for our university system.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, first off, let me say I think I agree with every point that you made there. It is true that you could dilute your efforts and end up just not doing quality. The encouraging thing, just in the past couple of months I've been on this board, I've seen announcements come up from department heads and deans, provost, that they were canceling and cutting out some programs that they couldn't justify. So I think the university has an active program of doing that, and it would be intent to bring to the administration's attention that I think that should be increased.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hargreaves. Thank you, Senator Hughes. At this time, I'd like to move on to the public hearing, and so we'll open the public hearing on public testimony in regard to Mr. Hargreaves being appointed to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. Is there anybody in the room care to testify? Seeing none, there's no one online ready to testify, so I will close the public hearing and come back to the committee. Any further questions or comments from our committee? What's the will of the committee? Senator Hughes.
Mr. Chair, I move that the following name appointee to the University of Alaska Board of Regents be forwarded to a joint session of the legislature for consideration. Mr. Darrell Hargreaves of Wasilla.
Thank you. Is there any objection to that motion? Seeing and hearing none, the motion passes. For the record, I'd like to say that this does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during the joint session. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the report. Please come back to order. Next, we'll take up the appointee to the State Board of Education Early Development. And we should have Tiffany Scott with us. And let me get that. There you are. Tiffany, are you with us?
Yes.
Thank you very much for being here. Ms. Scott, appreciate your joining us. Ask you, if you would, to do a brief introduction of yourself, talking about your background, what brings you, what you will bring to the state board, why you were interested in serving, and any goals you may have for our education system. So please, go ahead, Ms. Scott.
Uvlalotak, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Uvangali Nipak Sisira Nipisan. My Eskimo name is Nipisan. Nalaugmichusira Tiffany Scott. My English name is Tiffany Scott. Kikiktarung Mingurunga, Agalan, Kinyuvetka, Nurving Mingurut. I am from Kotzebue, but my family also comes from Norvik. I appreciate the committee's flexibility in allowing me to reschedule my hearing for today, as I was needed at work on Tuesday. I'm a registered nurse in the emergency department at the Manilik Health Center in Kotzebue, which serves 12 federally recognized tribes in the Northwest Arctic and the village of Sikigak, Point Hope. I'm a proud graduate of the class of 2003 at Colony High School in Palmer, the School of Nursing at the University of Alaska Anchorage, the Alaska Technical Center in Kotzebue, and hold a Bachelor of Liberal Arts from Harvard University Extension School in Cambridge, Massachusetts. This is the second time in 1 year that I'm coming before you in a confirmation hearing. Last year, former Governor Bill Walker appointed me to represent the 2nd Judicial District on the State Board of Education and Early Development. Governor Michael J. Dunleavy has reappointed me to the same seat for a 5-year term, subject to confirmation by the House and Senate. I'm humbled by the opportunity to come before the committee again. As it relates to the State Board, we have members who are leaders in special education, indigenous education, school counseling, serving underrepresented students in post-secondary education, local school board representation, athletics, and education policy. Each of these perspectives helps move the needle forward on the three commitments of Alaska's education challenge: increase student success, support responsible and reflective learners, and cultivate safety and well-being. It is my hope that bringing my perspective as a rural resident, nurse, and former school board member will add to the work that we are doing, especially as it relates to cultivating safety and well-being. Second, I'm interested in serving on the board because, by our state's earliest history, I would not have been granted a seat at this table as an Alaska Native person and woman. For much of my life, I heard from my mother the realities of boarding schools operated by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. My mother speaks of being plucked from her home at the age of 12 to attend schools in Southeast Alaska. She much laments the fact that upon her return home, her and her classmates knew their lives would never be the same. They traded their Etiquettes and Firmacluks for pedal pushers and high heels, and so went pieces of our culture that we are working hard to not only preserve but revitalize. I'm grateful for the many years of advocacy asserting the rights of Alaska Natives in education that has helped me reach a seat at this table now. The state must be a partner with tribes and Alaska Native organizations if we not only want to narrow the achievement gap, but take seriously the charge to transform our schools. For us, education gives us hope in the future and will help us overcome the social challenges that threaten its promise. We work together. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, Ms. Scott. I appreciate your service already on the board, and thank you for that. Are there any questions of Tiffany Scott? I see none at the table. Obviously, everyone knows you, have seen you in action on the board, and appreciate your activities there. So at this point, then, I will ask, I'll go into a public testimony. And open that at this time. Anyone in the room who would care to speak to this nomination? Anyone online? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close the public testimony and ask her any further comments or questions. Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you. I just wanted to put on record, we all appreciate Alaskans who come forward and serve our state, and I'm sure that she's well aware of the issues that we talk about around the table here, which has included the teacher turnover in rural Alaska and also urban Alaska, and also I'm not sure if you're aware, Tiffany, but I'm also concerned about the high rate of suicide amongst our young people, and so I just wanted to say that I think you're a fabulous addition to the board, and our lack of questions for you doesn't indicate any lack of interest in what you bring, and I think you're a great addition to the board. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator, for that comment. Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Tiffany, for your willingness to continue on. You did a great job on the Mat-Su School Board, and Tiffany also overlapped with a couple of my now-grown children at Colony High. And I just appreciate your service and your perspective, and I wanted to thank you very much. And your comments about transforming education ring true, and I'm glad you're there and you understand the need to close the achievement gaps. We have certainly pockets of excellence. There was a presentation yesterday in Senate Finance and some very stellar schools, but we also have some needs where we do need to close the achievement gap. So I appreciate your focus on that.
Thank you very much, Senator Hughes. Senator Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tiffany, I just wanted to extend my appreciation for your continuing engagement in public service. You have a long tradition through your family with public service, and I very much appreciate your looking out for our university and my alma mater. Thank you for being on board.
Thank you, Senator. Any further comments or questions? If not, what is the will of the committee? Senator Hughes.
Mr. Chair, I move the following named appointee to the Alaska Board of Education and Early Development be forwarded to a joint session of the legislature for consideration. Tiffany Scott of Kotzebue.
Thank you. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing and seeing none, the motion passes. Just for the record, this does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of this individual during the joint session. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the document. To order, and next we'll take up Senate Bill 79. This is the second hearing on the bill. Its intention today to have a committee discussion deal with any possible amendments to the bill, take up public testimony, and hold the bill for passage next week. Senator Hughes, for some opening comments.
And if it's all right with the chair, I'd like to go to the table with my staff.
Yes, please. Thank you. Senator Hughes and Sheila, good to see you.
Thank you. I'm Shelley Hughes, Senator for District F. Thank you, members of the committee. We did give you an overview in a sectional last time, but we did create a sheet for you with summary points in your packet. And so I just wanted to go through this because this bill is a bit comprehensive. I want to give a bit of history. This has been a project over a couple of years with some members of this committee, particularly Senator Begich, and also working. We had numerous joint hearings with the House Education Committee at the time, and we have brought forward the pieces that there were consensus on. So if you'd like, Mr. Chair, my intern will go through just to review the six major aspects of the bill, and then I can talk to you about some concepts we've offered to your office as a possible inclusion in a committee substitute. So would you like?
Yes, thank you, Senator. Ms. Morrison.
Hi, good morning through the chair, Sheila Morrison, and thank you for the opportunity to speak on the bill. And of the 6 points of the bill, the first 2 points really address students and the improved outcomes. And the next 2 points of the bill focus on the teachers and having good teachers and enough teachers. And the last 2 points of the bill really focus on savings and getting more dollars into the classroom. So on the first point, focuses on virtual education, and it creates a virtual education consortium for the department to allow students statewide to take online classes offered by other districts, and it gives districts the option to join the consortium. The consortium will maintain a database and a menu of the course offerings with course descriptions, video introductions of teachers, video instruction samples, and curriculum samples. Teachers will have access to virtual teaching training and professional development courses, and this will allow districts to charge for the courses offered, and districts can join the consortium and will be assessed a fee to support the operations of the consortium. The second part of that is that the course credit for the out-of-school activities would allow students to receive credit for activities outside of the school for career and technical education, physical art and music, including culture activities and the activities that meet the district's course requirements. The next two points of the bill that focus on teachers raises the bar for teacher certification and requires teacher certification test scores to be increased when they are lower than the other states. The ratio reporting portion of that requires each school district to report annually on the ratio of administrative employees to teachers to students, to the department, and to the district's local community, which would require the districts and the departments to report these ratios to the legislature as well. The rollover savings limit increase, that increases the school district's fund balance cap from 10% of their operating costs to 25%. To encourage the efficiency of improvements. The savings derived from the cooperative agreements are outside of the 25% cap for the first 3 years, so that could be pretty beneficial. The second part is the consolidation of administrative support in the department, and that consolidates the administrative support for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission into the department. And then the next portion of the bill, Senator Hughes is going to address on the considerations for the committee substitute.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
Okay. So, we did have some discussion at our last hearing about the specificity of the virtual education section of the bill. So we discussed removing some of that and instead requiring the commissioner to convene a working group so that the working group could come up, and these would be stakeholders who are involved from around the state, from the districts, to determine the structure, how the consortium would function, how the districts would participate, any maybe virtual teacher training requirements, the class fee methodology, those kind of things. So that's one suggestion, is to remove those specifics and try to keep the implementation on schedule, but have that working group. And we have we spoke with the commissioner, and he recommended convening stakeholders from the Association Technology and Education. It's ASTE, so I'm not sure what the S stands for. Senator Begich may know, but it's teachers, principals, superintendents, technology specials from throughout the state that have an association. And so it's a kind of a ready-made group that could offer representation and help. Secondly, at the last committee meeting, there was a section about the adjustment to the Praxis scores to keep up with the rest of the nation. And the word in the bill used periodically, and Jerry Covey suggested that we change that to a pattern of every 3 years. The third is the insertion of the word classroom prior to teacher when we're talking about those ratios, to make sure we have a good ratio of teachers to students. And the definition of classroom teacher was provided by the commissioner yesterday, and that is in your packet. And that definition would be, we suggest that would be included in the committee substitute as well. It's one that is used by the department as standard. The next one is a big one, and it's the Read by Nine, the early child literacy piece. As I think of this, and we just heard from Tiffany Scott about the achievement gaps that exist sprinkled across the state, and the virtual education really deals primarily with the high end, the middle school and high schoolers. At the low end, the need for reading by third grade is how to close the achievement gap. And so this bill would take it from both ends. Actually, you can use, I think of for a young kindergarten, first, second, third grader, in-person a teacher working with a small group of students maybe that are struggling with reading. But actually, it is happening in other places. They're beginning to use some online tools for that. I would never want to take away that live teacher from those young students, certainly, nor actually for the older students. But I just point that out, that there now are there's things that are proving to work even online for the younger ones. But so we're trying to close the achievement gaps at both ends, at the higher grades and at the lower grades, Mr. Chair. So that language, we have some legislation that has been used elsewhere. I encourage the committee to review it. And if there are things, one of the things I looked at it would require districts to hold summer camps. I suggested that be changed to May because that just might not work for some communities to have summer camps. So if members want to look through that language and see what you think, then another area of that language, which I would like to see, is if a child cannot move forward with his or her cohort as far as because of reading and is receiving intensive instruction, that the other subject matter, for instance, they're fine in math, perhaps, or they're fine in other areas, music and gym, to try to keep that student with their own cohort as much as possible. And as they receive that intensive reading training, give the parents and the student the option to move back with their cohort when they are up to speed with their reading. I think that would be the goal. Sometimes with young boys, for instance, sometimes if they move to you know, they're not ready to move forward because of their reading, the fit might actually be better with the other cohort. So it wouldn't be mandatory that they move ahead, but I think that should be an option. So that's one thing I would suggest. And I hope that the school districts will look at this. I know a lot of this districts are already doing. I spoke with Dr. Bishop. They're implementing a lot of this in the Anchorage School District already. But the goal, Mr. Chair, is to try to close the gaps across the state. And a child, as we've talked about before, they learn to read by 9, and then after age 9, they learn by reading. And so having that skill is so essential. So that's quite.
Senator Hughes, hold on just 1 minute. Mm-hmm. First, my staff has sent me a note saying that's the ASTE is the Alaska Society for Technology and Education. And it's a technology and science that our teachers and superintendents. Senator Birch has a comment, question.
Well, just a question. In reviewing the fiscal note, it indicates that the bill supports virtual education and requires that the Department of Education establish a virtual education consortium. I'm just wondering if you took out that as a requirement, how would it impact the fiscal note in any way?
Thank you for that question. Through the chair, and the commissioner at the last hearing said he wanted to work on bringing that down. The working group, I would expect that it would that first year. He believes that the way it was structured last year, I believe it was 7 or 8 employees that could be done with fewer. So that first year with the working group would probably be lower. And then once it was set in place, what the department would feel it would need as far as staffing. But he guessed that it would be less than what you see before you. So I do expect that to change.
Follow up?
Yes, please, Senator.
Yes, secondly, on the credits earned outside of the school day in the area of career and technical education, art, music, physical, I guess I'm trying to get a handle on how you would size those credits up in a curriculum as far as, you know, credits needed towards graduation. And how do you manage that so somebody doesn't show up with credits that, you know, obviously aren't going to advance their academic interests? But how do you keep sideboards on that through the chair?
Well, some districts are already doing it, and the course would have to meet the district requirements for that course. So take music, for instance, being in band, so many hours of band, contact with the band teacher, playing your instrument. If a person is in a community band or taking music lessons that equal that number of hours and the district feels it meets the course requirements, they could receive a music credit. The beauty of that, particularly for high schoolers, PE, for example, someone on the varsity basketball team, the number of hours that they're working out in the gym would probably meet those requirements, and it might allow that high school student free up a period for them to take something else of interest. So it would be district by district, and it would have to meet the course requirements for that district, and some are already doing it. We just think it's a good idea, and a lot of valuable things are happening outside the school building.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Yes, please follow up.
Lastly, there's a provision that increases the limit that a school district is allowed to retain its unreserved fund balance from 10% to 25% of district expenditures. Well, district expenditures for education are immense. And I guess I'm trying to understand, and I got a report back, and we got some information on how many dollars in the hundreds of millions of dollars are actually reserved. And as somebody has been involved in local government and has been very interested and dialed in on how much money the school district is kind of squirreling away in a fund balance that is actually applicable and could pay for education, why what's the justification for increasing the amount that a school district can retain from 10% to 25%, which seems like a pretty big jump? Through the chair.
Thank you for the question. And through the chair, I believe it's a couple hundred million statewide that is in all the combined totals. It is to encourage efficiency and to allow a school to perhaps, when there's a rougher time, have more, or perhaps they have a great instructional program that's going to help academic achievement, and so they're being efficient and saving it up and can apply it. This actually was brought forward. I believe Senator Von Imhoff was interested in this piece, and it's just to encourage efficiencies in the school districts and would be useful then when dollars are low.
Senator.
Just as a closing comment, as somebody that was involved in local government, I think you need to see all those piggy bank dollars on the table so you know so everybody's dealing with kind of an even playing field as far as dollars. So that does give me some concern about how many dollars are, and if it's a couple hundred million dollars, that's not insignificant as we try to move forward.
Absolutely. And through the chair, if that's something that the committee decided they wanted to move down to 15% or remove altogether, that that's up to the discretion of the committee. I certainly wouldn't want that to block the other great pieces of the bill. So,
thank you, Senator Hughes. We have also Senator Costello and then Senator Begich. Senator Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions about it. And thank you, Senator Hughes, for bringing this forward. I know you're a passionate advocate for improving results in education and are always thinking really innovatively and for all the hard work that you put into many education bills that you brought forward. So I just want to start by saying that. I have a question about the Virtual Education Consortium. I am aware that districts do already offer online courses. So my question, and I'm not sure if it's for you or for the department specifically, and if it is for the department, I'm happy to go offline and ask them this question and the other questions I have. If a school district has an agreement with, for example, the Anchorage School District has an agreement with Middlebury College for language classes, which are offered to students in middle school and high school, would this consortium mean that the department would have to be having conversations also with Middlebury College in addition to the local districts that have that conversation, or is this specifically for online courses that are offered within the capacity of the school building? So, for example, teachers that would be in a local, Alaska school, video conferencing or perhaps writing the curriculum and offering that online. I'm not sure what this looks like. And then the other thing I wanted to toss out there is, I've actually taught in three districts in the state of Alaska, and one of the questions I always had was, well, what does the Department of Education offer to teachers as support? One of the things that I would have liked to have had was access to examples of lessons that other teachers are using. And I used to write my own curriculum. I'm actually nationally recognized for authentic assessment from lessons that I wrote. And just the other day, I saw one of my former students here with her students in the Capitol exposing them to the legislature. And I thought, if I could have taken all of my lesson plans and what I did and given it to the Department of Education and they could, make it, put it in a format that other teachers in across Alaska can see, because I think that's a value to teachers is to support teachers. And I know that this is more of a focus on just sort of bypassing the teacher, really, and just getting a connection between an online class in one district and an online class in the other. So I have a few questions about how that looks, because there's a lot of work that goes into finding these online classes and then, communicating that to students. And that's all happening within the districts. And then to involve the Department of Education in this effort also, when the department may not even be helping Alaska teachers with lessons, I just think there's other things that we could be focusing on to help improve what's happening in the classroom, and I just wanted to throw that out there. So if you are able to answer any of my sprinkled questions throughout that.
And we also have department is online if you need their help.
Okay. Through the chair, love the question, and love it, the fact that it's coming from someone who has had some experience. I actually initially thought this menu or database would be such a wonderful thing. A student could browse and they could look at different classes they maybe could take, and they could watch a teacher in their style and say, ooh, I really like that teacher. But I also realized it would become a wonderful resource for teachers themselves to watch and see how different teachers teach. And so that database could be used for the very thing you're talking about, where those things could be passed on and shared. I know there's a teacher at Thielen Middle School who records how to do math problems and makes those available, and they're being accessed actually around the country because a student who's confused can watch it over and over till they get it. So there are lots of opportunities. As far as the particular arrangement that the Anchorage School District has with a college regarding language, this does not prescribe. They would have to go through the department. That could be the working group might want to discuss that. We originally wanted it primarily to be districts sharing open slots in classrooms with other districts, but it wouldn't prevent a third party, maybe something, you know, a college that teaches particular languages could be shared maybe with other districts as well. So it's we want it to, the working group is to allow those kind of conversations to take place so the districts themselves can figure out what would be most helpful.
Well, another question, Chair. And then on the issue of course credit for out-of-school activities, have you contemplated the response that this might have wherein, you know, a student in a public school is in band class, and now if this were to pass, what you would have is students finding and accessing and parents accessing other opportunities outside for music. And it, you know, I'm a huge supporter of music in schools, and my children are involved in you know, junior youth symphony and band, and we you know, prioritize that as a family, that they would, you know, access music, because I think it has a huge impact on a student's enjoyment of school and their ability to find an activity that's, you know, that keeps them in school. I think it, you know, the research shows that learning a musical instrument has tremendous benefits in a lot of different areas. And so, you know, part of why you have school bands and orchestras is for the students to be with their peers and have that experience. So I see it as more than just learning the notes or learning how to play a song, but the whole culture mm-hmm. of the music programs at schools, I think, are tremendously beneficial. And one of my most enjoyable moments as a parent is to go to a school band performance and watch this, you know, diverse group of students from across, you know, all different socioeconomic and cultural backgrounds coming together and performing for a public audience, which is usually the parents and grandparents. And so I'm just concerned, you know, that this might pull away students who have whose parents have the ability to pay for music lessons, whereas others don't. And so you would then perhaps lose that, I would say that coming together and of, you know, of students in a school. And I don't know, could you comment on that?
Yeah, yes, and you know, some of the school districts maybe could comment on too, because I had a number of superintendents tell me they already do this, and it has not ended up with what you're talking about. I think more and by the way, I had four children who did both choir and band, went to many wonderful concerts over the years. But I think that that it might supplement, so a child maybe who's planning to major in music, for instance, might be able to show more credit than just the band credit and the choir credit, but additional credit. But from what I've heard, it has not been a problem. It's probably more the exception of a student who maybe wants to free up a period to take a higher math class because they're going to try to get into engineering program or something like that. So, but I, you know, if we hear it's a problem, we could certainly look at that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I know there are the questions. We do have four people that I want to testify, and I'd like to get to that before and get to the public testimony, you know, fairly soon. So please go ahead, Senator.
I'll ask one more question, and then I'll go offline with the sponsor. But so in regards to teacher certification test scores being increased when they are lower than other states, you know, one of the things I know about the classroom is that you don't necessarily want to have you get an A if you're, you know, in the top, you know, 10% of the class, and then your grade or your performance is based relative to other people. What I have learned is that there are standards, and once you meet the standard, then, you know, that's, you know, it doesn't say, well, you have to be in the top 10% or whatever. You can have a whole class of students who achieve an A, And the example I'll use is in aviation, right? It's performance-based assessment where pilots are trained and they have to prove and show that under certain circumstances that they can perform to a certain standard. And the reason I bring this up is that if you're saying all of a sudden that, you know, a person's ability to receive a teacher certification is relative to others across the country, I would rather see that there's a standard and that's the standard that we want and then support that, because then what you'll have if this were to pass would be teachers who had one threshold to become a teacher under one environment, whereas a few years later the standard is going to change, whereas my experience is that the standard shouldn't change. I mean, and if we did this with pilots across the country, it just wouldn't make sense. And I always come back to that because to me, that's an example of performance-based assessment where, you know, you have the confidence that, you know, when you get in that plane, you don't go up to the pilot and say, which school did you graduate from or what's your training? No, there's this confidence that when you meet the standard, which is measurable and it's known to be what's needed, then there's that confidence. And so I just have a few questions about, you know, the fairness of one class of teachers having one standard and another class having another standard. But Senator Hughes, we could always take that conversation offline if we're, you know.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that because I hadn't really thought of it that way. It might be we just need one adjustment and then not periodically do it, not do it every 3 years. I do know, for instance, for high school physics, I believe the score in Alaska was 25 points or so lower, which to me is, if I have a student that's trying to go on to college, I want him to make sure that physics teacher knows what he or she's teaching. So when the difference is that great, we might want to look at adjusting them. So that is something we can certainly discuss if we wanted to change to a one-time adjustment for some of the ones that are there seems to be too great of a difference. But I hadn't thought of the way you brought it up.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Bagage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of points I want to bring up. I know you have four people online. So first, I just wanted to talk about the out-of-classroom experience from experience. One of the things that we had to do as young people at my high school, if we wanted to do an out-of-class credit experience, is show the teacher that it met the requirement. So that was actually a burden on us. And I think that this bill encourages will encourage students to do that. Not only does it build a dialogue between the two, but it also forces the student to really contemplate the requirements, the credit requirements, and show how their work relates to it. Anchorage, ASD has done challenge courses and other courses that have required that for years, decades, really. And it actually got me out of school early because I was able to double up on credit courses and things like that. But I had to prove it to my teachers, and that was a rigorous and very difficult process. So I wanted to share that bit of information because I think it supports the bill. Second point I wanted to bring up is just the fund balance issue. We received a letter last week, all of us did, from Melody Douglas, who's the head of ALASBO, the Alaska Association of School Business Officials. And it laid out the importance of fund balances, and I think it's really important that we be clear about why we have fund balances, that 200-plus million that you talked about earlier, Senator Hughes. One of the issues for that is because when we pay teachers' salaries, for example, we have to pay them on a regular basis. And if funding for any reason is held up at the state level, you could fail to meet paying a salary. Those salaries don't all come there are some salaries are done year-round, others are done over the nine-month period. So what it does is, just like we use the CBR as a cash flow, the Constitutional Budget Reserve as a cash flow, those fund balances are used there and required by accounting. Most accounting processes require that to make sure that we are fundamentally doing the right thing in our due diligence as public officials in our public process. The increase of that, the increase suggested by, I believe, Senator Von Imhoff, is to take into account if you're going to do massive innovation, it may require some upfront costs, and so there would be some ability here that would allow that. Whether it's 25% or 10% or 15%, I don't know, but that's the issue. There's also the corollary that certain budgets and grant applications, and a lot of our money comes from those, as well as our bonded debt, require that we keep reserves on hand. So I just wanted to be clear what those fund balances are, because it's recently been brought up that if we just sweep the fund balances, we can eat the costs of education cuts that are being proposed there. And I want to point out that that would be devastating for these school districts. But I would encourage everyone to read the letter. from Melody Douglas on that. The third point I wanted to bring up was on reading and the Ninth Grade Act that's here. I just have a couple of concerns I want to make sure that the sponsor is aware of. The retention issues in a district like Chugach, for example, which uses a fluid process instead of a graded process, that might not be effective because there would be no way to measure that, and they don't use retention as a factor. Yesterday or 2 days ago, State Board designee Griffin mentioned the Finnish model, which also uses a flexible model. If we were to adopt models like that, then the idea of a third grade retention would be less effective because it wouldn't fit those models. So as we look toward innovation, let us not bracket. I would suggest that we look to make sure we keep options as well so that we don't end up bracketing us into not coming up with an innovative system like the one that Member Griffin suggested, or the Finnish system, or the system that's used by former Commissioner Hanley now in the Chugach system. So keep that in mind in terms of once we start bracketing really tightly, we might lose that. I'm just offering that. And my last point, I'm trying
to... May I respond to that
Sure, please.
I just want to say, having such smart people up here that are bringing things can really make improvements. And so I think with the chair, of course, is guiding the committee substitute process, but I think we probably need to add some kind of a waiver for if we were to adopt some of this language for the examples that you give. Yes, so thank you for that. So you had another point.
You're welcome, Senator Hughes, and that is why we're bringing it up, because I support the legislation. The last point is just on the issue of curriculum that Senator Costello brought up, and I agree that what teachers need is supportive curriculum. The other body recently in examining former Senator McKinnon's bill, which was a $19.5 million approach to curriculum revision, it eliminated all of that funding. And while I'm absolutely confident we didn't need the incentives for that because everyone wants curriculum, what we lost in that process, and which I hope we consider here in our process to support exactly what you're trying to do here, is the three curriculum positions that were in that bill for the department, which is, as we have said over and over again, Mr. Chairman, notoriously close to not meeting its support requirements under as perceived through court cases under the Constitution. And so I'm hopeful that we'll retain those three positions so that we can, in fact, support this bill once it passes by providing the curriculum support and other support necessary for teachers. So with that, that wasn't really a question, just a comment on all four of those, and I thank you for being considerate of some of these suggestions and ideas, Senator Hughes, and for your amazing work on pushing forward this long-sought education revision.
Absolutely. There are two points for the consideration for the committee substitute. I haven't covered the last two bullets, and I believe they're significant enough. I want to make sure members understand them in case they have other comments. Right now we use particular dates in October for the student count as part of the base student allocation calculations. And this would change it so instead of the average for those few dates in October, it would be the entire school year. The idea being it would encourage districts to encourage attendance year long. We're hearing some of the particular places where we have the achievement gaps, attendance is a problem. And this isn't the magic bullet that all of a sudden a student's going to show up, but it would create the culture in the district that attendance is important year round. I know they work hard to get the students there in October, but we want them to do it year round. It also would help smooth over when someone maybe who's special ed, for instance, more funding is coming in and they're only there at the beginning of the year and then they move to another district and that funding at the new district is not coming with that student. So this might smooth some of that and make it more fair across the state as students move. So I wanted to bring that one up. And then the last one is it expands in statute now is language regarding cooperative agreements. And this just expands that language to include shared services, for instance, between districts or between a district and a business, a government agency, a nonprofits. And the goal there is as districts enter into cooperative agreements, they're working to to realize savings that then can be funneled back into the classrooms. We're not requesting that additional money right now for those cooperative agreement grants. That might be something the Finance Committee might consider. But at this point, we're just trying to expand the language so that if there were ever dollars allocated for the cooperative agreement grants, it would include these this opportunity for districts.
Thank you very much, Senator. So are you, can we go on to public hearing then? All right. We have Deborah Riddle online for questions from the department. I don't think we have any questions for her, but let's go on to folks in order of when they signed up. Sandra Meredith, Tamara Van Wy, Judy Elledge, Lisa Parody, and finally Willie Capello online. So Sandra Meredith, if you are here. So just for questions, okay. And Tamara Van Wy, the same issue. All right, Judy Elledge, we have Judy here in the room. Thank you, Judy, good to see you.
Good to see you, thank you. Once again, Senator Stevens and all of the people on the education, they all know that that's kind of my thing, is education. I did testify on this bill last year. And I wanted to, since I'm somebody that spent since 1997 in rural Alaska working with the low-performing schools, sleeping on the floor, taking my own food, been very dedicated, so I have been on the ground for those years working with those schools. I do think I bring a different idea of really what's going on in education. And I'm going to tell you why I support the virtual classroom. For one example, our K-12 schools today are pretty archaic. You have one teacher trying to teach 12 grades. It's impossible. When the district hires that teacher, they choose a high school teacher to because they feel like they need someone to teach high school students. The problem is, in most of those schools, there's fewer high school kids. There's maybe one or two. And then you've got all the little guys down here that have no teacher to teach reading. So if you really wanted to change how things were done in education and help reading, you would look to be sure that those schools had good primary teachers to teach kids how to read, and that is not happening. And I think in the virtual classroom, that does help untie that teacher with some of the time to spend the time down in the lower grades, and that's just a problem always, even in a multi-age classroom, K-1-2. Let me just tell you. I couldn't do K-1-2. I mean, that is the difference between a kindergarten and a second grader is all the world. And they may or may not have a good aide in the classroom or someone that shows up. So that is one of the things that I think that would help immensely, because I do believe that one teacher cannot, they can't teach five different subjects. And so I think the virtual classrooms really opens that door and the eyes to the world outside there. One of the other things that I really want to support is truancy. I do support doing the count all year. Our truancy law is a joke. If you can miss 50 days of school and be passed to the next grade, why do you have it? There's no consequences for truancy in the state of Alaska. If a principal tries to retain someone, I have seen that they were overruled by the local board. So we really do need to do, you can't blame teachers for everything that's going on in the world today. The second thing is in the reading, the K-3 reading, the model that the Read by Nine, that was looked at in the education transitional team, and I do support that because it's very clear, it's very simple, it's only a few pages, and we had that law and No Child Left Behind, every child will read by third grade. Well, really, how's that working for us? The problem is, if there is no consequences, you can write all the laws you want. And so anything that does not have a consequence for the district, I mean, what are you doing? And I have seen over and over and over again millions of dollars spent for school improvement and nothing really done. Or while we're there, it's done, it's not continued. And it's a major systemic problem in most certainly in the rural schools. And I think all of you are aware of that. So I like this and the fact that it's a start. It's at least a start to get us where we want to be, because these are the schools that I work with, and I will be working in K-3 reading this year. So I'm really excited about that because I do think that we can make a difference if we can turn Fort UConn around. Everybody reading on grade level, I think you can turn just about anybody around. So, but it takes time, and so we have a 3-year plan. You can't do this in a year. So,
Thank you, Ms.
Really
Ellers.
Support that.
I appreciate your experience and your sharing that experience with us. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Well, yes, Senator Begich.
Just a quick question. I just want to comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to say I appreciate you saying it doesn't happen overnight. It does, in fact.
No, it does not, and you can. And I think oftentimes we give this it's got to be a plan, and that is a problem when you have that. But the way we're doing it is that I said I wouldn't do this unless it was a three-year plan. It just has to be. It has to be to bring everybody on in the state. There's a lot of school districts, and there's a lot of problems. Let's don't be silly and think we can solve this in a year. Thanks.
Thank you. Very good point. Thank you, Senator. We'll move on then to Lisa Parity. Ms. Parity is in the room with us. No stranger to this committee. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Skiles Parity. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, representing superintendents, principals, school business officials, and the host of other school administrators serving our students across Alaska, which includes many members of ASTE, which you spoke to earlier. And I was not planning to testify. I was just signing in like a dutiful person, but I wanted to just share some of what Judy just shared and say I think definitely going the right direction. Obviously, we have many districts, as has been testified to, that are moving this way already, and whatever we can do to support this direction in a thoughtful, methodical way, I think it's important. And I just want to reiterate that hopefully we will take time to do things the right way. And please lean on our members to support these efforts. I know Mary Wagner, Dr. Mary Wagner, the superintendent in Sitka, is a member of ISTE. ISTE is the International Society for Technology Education. It's the pinnacle for this type of education, and she surely should be included in any process, I think, going forward as someone recognized in the state as a leader, not only in our state, but for the nation. And so I just share her as an example. There's a lot of really skilled people trying to figure out putting these things in places, and want to offer our services as we go forward. And having said that, there's a work group kind of trying to put feedback together, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to have a public input process because of the changes. It's not quite ready to share, and so we can do that through writing or hopefully in another hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Parity. Yes, Senator Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being here this morning. And you may have heard some of the discussion regarding, through the chairman, of the unreserved fund balance increase for districts. Don't districts, when they if they hire employees, don't they commit and obligate those funds for their budget on an annual basis? And I'm just trying to get a handle on the fund. We've received a memo from Deed, I believe it was Deed, that indicates the fund balances in the $200 million range if you aggregate that across all the districts statewide. And I'm just the concern that that's set up with a 10% limit on how much a district can reserve. And I guess if you increase that to 25%, I mean, if you spend $1 billion in education, that means that'd be like 25% of that, I guess. That's a district expenditure. So I guess I'm trying to understand do you see a need for that increase, I guess, or from your perspective through the chair?
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Birch, I would love to discuss this with you offline and bring forward our LASLO folks who are dealing intimately with the facts around fund balance. And I think our affiliate at LASLO did a nice job of outlining how it looks different by district. So by way of example, here in Juneau, they have 3 days of fund balance if they had to operate their district. I think to look at that number can be deceiving because it really is for emergency use and, you know, the boiler that goes out in many ways. And I, you know, I was speaking to Dr. Weiss, the superintendent here, and about this issue when the governor was using it as a reason to that districts could transition under the proposal that he put forth, and why that was really not feasible. And she said, you know, for example, Juneau could operate for 3 days. So I think without going further into whether it's a good idea or not, I think there is a feeling that the more many districts aren't even at the 10, which is where it's capped today. And I think there's a feeling that, of course, you should have savings. Any reasonable business, you would want to have a savings for those times in which things, you know, earthquakes happen, things like that, that you aren't prepared for. But for this is a good discussion, and I would like to see if we could bring some of our LASBA folks forward to go a little bit deeper about the specifics in this area, because we want to dispel the notion that is being used out here that this is a transition fund to buffer school districts against what's being proposed with the budget. It isn't. It just flat isn't. It's exactly what it's supposed to be, an emergency fund used to support districts in the times that they need to. And I think you want school districts to be stewards. You want that accountability, and that's what they do with these funds. And frankly, I was looking at Jim Anderson, Chief Financial Officer for the Anchor School District, saying that they're required by municipal charter to keep approximately, you know, a percent of their fund balance to secure a good bond rating. I mean, so there's those specific pieces by district that we have to take into account when we're talking about those levels. And our LASBO affiliate is by far the best to discuss that.
Thank you, Dr. Faraday. Yes, follow-up, Senator?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, 3 days out of 300, that's a 1% reserve, and I get it that that's probably not enough, but there's been some, you know, concerns voiced about, you know, if the voters turn down a bond issue and the school district goes ahead and builds it anyway because they have the fund, you know, the fund balance or the reserves, that's a little, in my view, it's a little disingenuous. And I think I know you get into this layering process where the, you know, a municipality has to have a fund balance to cover bond debt and so forth, and then you have the municipality that approves the school district budget. You know, the school district also has a fund balance and a reserve. I guess I'm just trying to kind of sort that through. And the only reason it popped up is because of the proposal increase from 10% to 25%, which you know, I mean, that's the reason the questions are. I've got questions, and I look forward to an opportunity to follow up with you offline.
Thank you, Senator Birch. And let's stay on this issue of fund balance for a minute, then we'll go on to some other issues that Senator Costello has. Do you have a comment, Senator Hughes?
Yes, I do have one on fund balance, because I realized I misspoke, because I think the person who brought that idea to me was actually Senator McKinnon when she was serving, and I believe Senator Von Himhoff was supportive of it. And so I just wanted to correct that. And then I don't have another question. It's off of fund balance, just a comment. I hope the department took note as far as Dr. Parody's comment about Dr. Wagner from Sitka being a great person to be part of the work group, because I've spoken with her and I believe she would be, and would appreciate the association's involvement and being part of as the virtual education piece is developed.
Thank you, Senator. Dr. Parody.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just follow up with Senator Birch on one quick thing, and that is that I don't believe that districts can redirect funding for a purpose other than what was stated on the bond proposition. I don't think they can do that. So I'm not sure of the specific situation you're addressing, but as a general proposition, I don't think they can do that. So again, this is an important discussion, and I think the ability to save when you can is appropriate, and I think you would all agree with that. So I appreciate you looking at this opportunity. But I would never want it to be misconstrued that districts are able to save a lot, or that they have, you know, that they're squirreling away money, because that certainly isn't the case in Alaska. So thank you.
Thank you. And a very important discussion. Senator Costello is waiting patiently, and so we're going to, yes, Senator Begich. Okay. Yes. No, it's not. So let's go to Senator Birch. And also, we have the department in the room, too, if they have any comments.
And I just wanted to share Senator Birch's concern for why. I don't know the reason why it would need to increase, and that's why I hope we can get an answer to that question as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Parody. Does the department have any reflection on fund balance at this time? Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Parody, before you leave, no, I thought you were, but before we go on, if the department wants to weigh in on fund balance, I'd be glad to hear from you on that. In the meantime, Senator Costello.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair, I know there are people waiting patiently online, so I'll just briefly ask. And Dr. Parody, thank you so much for your persistence and being here and testifying. It really does add so much to the conversation. The bill before us brings sort of a certain vision on a variety of topics before the legislature, and we're here looking at them, trying to discern which ones are going to have results that we want. You know, I know in, I think, 1977, Senate Bill 35 passed and Governor Jay Hammond signed it into law. This was the bill that gave very clear direction that, we are a state of local control. I am a fan and support, local decisions made regarding our schools by the people who have the kids in school, who know the community. So I'm always looking at education bills through that lens. My question to you is, what do superintendents say they need? I mean, I would really like to have that discussion about what they would like. And I feel that the legislature has never really gotten to that conversation because we're always arguing about the funding, which is why I'm a huge supporter of getting that done early so that we can free up the time to have these other discussions. But if you were to say, what are the superintendents asking for from the legislature?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Costello, thank you for the question, and I would like to reserve the right, if possible, to follow up with you as well, because I think that is such an important question. We've talked a lot about the need to stabilize districts, and so that has some to do with the funding element, but also has to do with timing of funding and the ability to sign contracts in a way that secures quality staff. So I think that piece is important, and again, we thank you for bringing forward your legislation proposal. I do think our joint position statements do a good job of outlining some of the things that they feel are most important. For example, early childhood education. If we want our students to be able to do the things we need them to do by third grade, we need to invest in their learning and make sure they're ready to learn by the time they come to school. And so we appreciate Senator Begich's effort with regard to SB 6 and the importance, I think, of all of us in education to recognize that our students come, as you know, as an educator, and to us in lots of different packages. And in order for them to succeed, we must invest in that early learning as a state. So I think on that end, that's really important. I think that we are also very committed to, I think this list is so long, I'd love to contemplate it longer. I'd encourage you to review the joint position statements. I mean, career technical education on the other end of the scope, if you will, so important to our students. We know that students that engage in career technical education courses graduate. That is a key component to their ability to graduate. We need to continue to build that out for all students. I think that extending the reach of good teachers, quality teachers, whatever we can do to shore up our crisis around quality teaching, and this is, I see your bill as a measure in helping to do that. I do want to remind the committee that the state's taken, and I know I've spoken with the commissioner about this, we've taken stabs at this, through the ACLIN, the Alaska Learning Network, which the state supported for a long period of time, where we had high quality classes being available, to all students. I mean, we've gone this route before, and it was a really good effort that had funding taken away and then collapsed. And so I think we're at a point where we do need to figure that piece out, but know it's for the long haul, and there will be bumps in the road, and we're going to have to really commit to increasing bandwidth. I mean, that's a whole other part of this dialogue. You have bills before you in the Senate, in the House, to incrementally increase the broadband assistance grant to a minimum of, which is important language, of 25 megs. And again, you all know that 25 megs is not where we need to be in terms of connectivity for our students. But it may be the best we can do this year, but we every year have to look at this. You know, we don't have $2 billion to wire the whole state, but we could do this one. And then next year we need to look again. Where are we? What can we do incrementally to keep building that out so that we can better support programs like are being suggested in this bill? So you should never ask me that question, Senator Costello, because I can talk to you all day long about what we need. But I do appreciate you asking it, because at the end of the day, we do all need to work together to figure out how we're going to do this for our students. And I think everyone recognizes that choice and opportunities and doing things in a different way is in front of us, and we need to figure out thoughtfully how to go forward. And we are at your service to do so. Superintendents, I will tell you that job is gotten harder and harder, right? And I was fortunate to present, and Senator Begich was there, and Senator Hughes to, oh, and Senator Casella, you are. We were all there. About, and if you recall the chart that had the X's on the superintendents since I've been here, it's a really hard job, and we've lost the far majority of our superintendents. Our experience levels across the state are it's really declined, I guess, in terms of those folks that have been in their positions for a long time. I can count on two hands the number of folks that are still in positions that when I started, they were in. But when you look at longevity with leadership, if you look at someone like Dan Walker, who has been at the LKSD for years, his ongoing leadership is making, and those around him, his leadership team, and the programs that they put in place and that they've focused on year after year are making a difference for those kids in their graduation rates, in the fact that they don't have a school in the lowest 10% in LKSD, our largest rural school district. Significant, significant. Those are the kinds of progress points we need to be looking at. But you look at their structure. They've had sustained, focused, ongoing leadership, and they pour enormous energy into retention of their teachers and into growing their own. I mean, they're doing a lot of, like you've been saying, pockets of prosperity. Well, LKSD is a model for rural schools, but it comes with really solid leadership over time. And we are not experiencing that across the rest of the state. So a lot of pieces, and I think if we recognize there's no silver bullets here, that we have a lot of things that we have to do in concert, you know, we can get there, and many places are. And we need to understand what they're doing, replicate those things, and support other districts to get there.
Thank you. Senator Hughes?
I just want to say, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your comments. We need to be in it for the long term this time. There's not going to be, we won't be able to turn back, I don't think so, especially because we know the teacher shortage. It's going to be really important to give students statewide access to the great teachers and make sure every classroom, you know, doesn't, that if there are empty seats in Kodiak, for instance, with a great teacher, that a village student would have access. It's just going to be crucial. We will not be able to turn back. I also want to say, and the Senate Finance Committee, one of the things that surfaced was the correlation between career and tech courses and academic achievement in all the core subjects. And might not be there right now when we talk about virtual education as far as students putting on goggles and participating, for instance, in a welding class, but that's going to come. Even the career tech piece is going will be achievable in places where it might in a village, you might not be able to set up a welding shop, but the students could still participate in that class. I mean, you think of the kind of video games and things that are out there now, and this is going to move into the education realm as well. So that career tech piece is very correlated to academic achievement, so I'm excited about that as a possibility, as well as the middle college piece tying into this. Thank you.
Thank you. A great discussion. I'm sorry. I would like to move on to Willie Capello, who's been patiently waiting for an hour. I know we have a lot more to discuss.
I just want to thank you for the time and appreciate the comments about local control, because as we move forward, districts know best with their communities what their children need as well.
Thank you, Dr. Merritt. I appreciate your time with us. Let's go on to Willie Capello from Quinnahawk. Willie, are you with us?
Yes, Senator, I am. Thank you. I live in Quinnahawk, part of the LKSD system out here, 450 miles due west Anchorage on the coast of the Bering Sea. And this is interesting, but I look at it as a different because I'm not part of the system. I've been watching LKSD for 30 years. We have three kids between Stella and I. One's graduated Georgetown. Our youngest is in Mount Edgecombe right now because she wants to go to college so she can have a job like her sister. And the way I see it, LKSD needs a total forensic audit. You can change your superintendents, but they walk into a system that's been set in place for so many years, they can't change anything. I'm living here. I talk to these school teachers. You're lucky if they stay here 2 years, and I'm thinking, why don't they do it like the Army? Let's just, instead of join the Army and get a college education, why doesn't the district hire to where, hey, we're going to pay for your education. You sign a contract, give us 5 years, and your student loans pretty much go away. These young people get out here in these villages, it's a total different lifestyle. No beer, no college life. No grocery stores. They're hiring wrong. The district is spending its money wrong right now. I'm questioning how LKSD can afford to buy passes to the Bethel swimming pool for all of its employees in Bethel, a couple hundred of them. I'm questioning right now how LKSD for their UPIC immersion can be paying payments on a great big brand new huge building that I don't know was over 20 million bucks that was going to be a grocery store. A grocery store couldn't make payments, but the Native Corporation is getting paid for their brand new building for a UPIC immersion school. I'm going, wait a minute here. Something's not adding up. We have principals and vice principals that are on an airplane continuously to Bethel for meetings. Yet at the same time, state's already put into all these villages video conference and live feeds. Why are they flying all the time? And even a bigger question, why do we have a principal in every school? Seems like a vice principal in a school with maybe two principals doing 10 villages or 15 villages, whatever the difference is, could handle it through video conference. There's like 20 jobs, 25 jobs right there that we have double staffing doing the same thing, a principal and a vice principal. The waste out here is unbelievable. I'm 100% into forensic audits. What's going on out here? I sat on Bethel City Council, and I'm going, we couldn't self-insure ourselves as a city. How does a school district self-insure itself? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I'd sure like to know, though, what kind of slush fund does that take? It'd be a huge plus to every second-class city to be able to self-insure. The waste is unbelievable. I want forensic audits, and by consolidating these schools, I think is a great idea. There's just too much duplication of jobs. And where we're really malfunctioning is all of us parents out here, there's five kids from Quinnahawk. All of us would love to have our kids right in Bethel. And if you look at all the villages out here, 57 villages on the YK, that's got to be a pretty good percentage of Mount Edgecombe down there. Why aren't they here? Why are we flying them all the way down there? It takes a fortune to fly to Sitka for a parent. If they're here on the Delta, there's times of the year you can snowmobile in and see your kid, or you can take a boat in the spring. in the fall. It don't make sense. There's no shop classes. Well, that's what these kids want. And you can't have it when you only have a few high school kids in a village. You just can't do it. And I talk, my friends are teachers, you know, and I'm talking to them and they're going, no, it needs to change. And that's what I'm hoping comes out of all this. I think there's nobody really that you can point a finger at and say, oh, you're the guilty party. It's just a system that's got out of control for too many years. And once those perks and everything else are set in place, it's basically impossible to pull them away again. And it needs to change. Whatever you guys end up doing, everybody else better be ready for change. That's kind of the way I see it. But I can just about guarantee you there's a ton of slush fund money in Bethel. There's no reason they're buying $70,000 Suburbans at the high school, a fleet of them. I know they make cheaper vehicles than that, and I've looked at these vehicles sitting at the airport while they're waiting to pick a teacher or somebody up, go through them. There's every bell and whistle on there. And I'm going, holy cow, nobody can afford to buy these things except governments. So I appreciate your time. I really don't have any solutions to your problems other than you have to know how much money is actually in the district that you're not seeing. It has to be there, so a forensic audit is what's needed. That gives a new superintendent. What's Bethel had? Three new superintendents in the last 4 years, I think. You know, they can't come in and change anything if they don't even know what they're walking into. We need to have a starting point. We need a fresh starting point. And that's what I have, and I really appreciate your folks' time, and I wish you the best of luck with your mission there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Capello. Appreciate your patience, but also your comments. We take them seriously. Yesterday at Finance Committee, Senator Hoffman spoke exactly the issue you were speaking of about the lifestyle and the difficulty of teachers flying in from Boston and the difficulty they have of and not staying very long, not staying many years. So really appreciate your comments. And to come back to the committee, any comments or questions at this time? It was a great discussion, very important discussion, very important issues that we've been going over. And at this time, there's no further business coming before us. Well, let's see. We are going to set this aside, let me make that clear, for further review. And if anybody has any specific amendments that they would care to make, we'd like to have them by April 8th, if possible by noon, to move this ahead smartly. And if there's no, Senator Hughes, please.
Oh, I just want to say that the waiver idea that Senator Begich brought up regarding the literacy piece, the fund balance, we need to explore that more. I just want to let you know I'll be talking to your offices and Senator Costello regarding the BRAC Praxis score adjustment. So be thinking if you have a way you want to see that in the bill. I'll be visiting offices. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I appreciate members of the committee willing to stay this late. So nothing further coming before us. We will adjourn at 10:56.